Do you remember a time when sleeping on the floor with your friends wouldn't have been considered weird? The management of this website invites you to a new dimension in podcasting, an experience so fun, it can only be compared to a childhood sleepover. It's not just about horror.
Tom Atkins proves that any man is leading man material.
It's not just about action.
If you're going to rank Van Damme movies,
yeah, it's up there.
I'd put it top five.
It's not just about comedy.
There's no other person in the world that loves Weekend at Bernie's more than you.
It's not just about science fiction.
And you scrim with, like, a beautiful comb over.
It's about nostalgia. Can you survive the Saturday night movie sleepover? It's not a movie. It's a podcast about movies.
You can follow Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. That's SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. On Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Player FM, and Stitcher.
Everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for a very special discussion of Howard Stern's Private Parts by Fla Fla Flohi.
Hello.
And Tata Tuti.
Baba Booey, Baba Booey.
That's Mike and Adam Thaws. Welcome back, boys.
Thank you.
Hey there.
Thanks for being here. So what do you guys think of Howard Stern's Private Parts? I just want to immediately get the all the double entendre out of the way.
Okay.
Where we talk about his wang and not the movie. So we're going to be talking about the movie, the biography of Howard Stern from 1997, based on the best-selling book later on in the show. But first, boys, as is our custom here at F This Movie, whip them out! No! have you seen anything good lately?
Who first?
I don't care.
This is my first time doing this podcast. I've seen a few things. I saw on, when was it, Tuesday night?
I don't need to know when you saw a movie.
I saw... Let's see.
I just want you to know that this is new.
But it's really not new. I went and saw Blade Runner.
Yes.
Thanks to the Chicago Film Critics. Well, what's the series called?
The Critics Classic Series, I think.
There you go.
Sounds right.
Saw that at a local theater for only $5. And what a movie.
Director's cut, or was it the
final cut?
Final cut.
Okay, gotcha.
So this is where they reshot what's her name running through the glass, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So it's not, it looks fine.
It's not a dude right. In a wig.
Exactly. No voiceover.
Okay.
That is a movie that I swear to God, every time I see it, I fall more and more in love with it.
Yeah.
It's weirdly mesmerizing with that score and that pace, and the visuals obviously are amazing. I remember seeing it for the first time in college and being a little underwhelmed, which is amazing to think that movie could underwhelm me, but, or maybe that's the wrong word, but I was expecting one thing and I got something very different and I didn't love it, but
the title makes it sound like cool.
Yeah,
like it's a cool title, you know what I mean?
It's like a hockey movie
or just like something super like sci-fi action.
Yeah,
and it's not sure. Really
right. And I knew, you know, how famous it was. I must not have known why exactly, but it's just a beautiful movie.
Had you ever seen it in a theater before?
No, I had not. So it was great seeing it on a big screen.
That has one of my favorite opening shots of all time.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
When you look at like modern comics and things like that, like you can trace basically anybody who draws tech or buildings and stuff like that, it's all either traced back to Star Wars or Blade Runner.
Every like futuristic thing just became Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
It's raining all the time and cities are overcrowded. Okay, Blade Runner.
Yeah,
right.
When we saw the fucking Total Recall remake, like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, guys, great. We saw Blade Runner.
It feels so ahead of its time. But yet it does not feel dated to me, at least.
No, not at all. And you watched that documentary.
Yes. Dark Days.
Which just makes you love the movie even more.
Yeah, it's like a 3.5 hour, 4 hour documentary.
Yeah,
it's just amazing. I also watched, on a Ridley Scott kick, I rewatched Alien. which another one that another movie I feel is an absolute masterpiece. Another one that I probably love more and more every time I see it.
That happens to me with that movie. Not to cut you off.
No.
Every time I rewatch Alien, I like it more than the last time.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I can't imagine Alien being made today the way that he made it, just with the pace, with the how dark it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think it would have to be like an indie, which means it wouldn't have the budget for the set or the alien effects.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, at a studio, forget it. No way.
Right.
And the alien would be CG. And,
but we'd have to see a lot. Like, you don't see a whole hell of a lot of the alien, which I guess was very intentional on Ridley Scott's part.
Yeah, because people used to know how to shoot FX, you know?
Right.
Did you listen to... I know I bring up Killer POV a lot, but last week they had the two guys from the effects company, Tom Woodruff, and I can't remember the other guy's name. So they do a bunch of practical effects. They did, like, Pumpkinhead. They did Aliens. And they talk about, like, most modern filmmakers don't know how to shoot effects. They want to put it just in bright light, show it off as much as possible, or it's just CG and you see it way too much. And so Ridley Scott is a guy who knew how to shoot effects like that.
Yeah. And it's, man, and then I followed that up with Aliens, one of Adam's favorite movies.
I love that movie.
I love Aliens too. And I don't need to, I know people want to pick which one, you know, it's either Team Alien or Team Aliens. I guess as I say that, I'm going to say I'm Team Alien, but I really do love Aliens. It's such a great sequel to me, and it feels very...
That opening scene, or not opening scene, but that scene where they go through the abandoned colony for the first time, and the only thing you have is the sound of their like motion sensors going like, oh my God, it just gets me every time. I know what's going to happen. My heart's just pounding every time I watch that movie.
However, you have ruined that movie for me, because every time Newt talks. Of you doing your new
mostly.
mostly.
Oh, Newt. Yeah. Carrie Henn.
What I love about those two movies is like you have two great science fiction movies and they're totally different, but on the same subject. It's just so great.
Yeah, it's just awesome. So I'm going to go. I haven't seen Alien 3 in forever, so I'm looking forward to watching that one.
Better than I think people give it credit for, because it followed up two, I think, masterpieces.
Well, and it was so
plagued with...
It was doomed from the outset. Yeah, like, it was never going to be very good. And I'm in this weird middle position where I'm like, yeah, it's probably better than a lot of people give it credit for, but I also don't think it's as good as the other half give it credit for. Like, there's a lot of people who are like, oh my God, it's so underrated. It's so great. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's not. But it's also not garbage, you know? Like, I don't even hate Resurrection, to be fair. It's been a long time since I saw it.
I don't think I've seen that since I saw it in the theater.
But I remember not hating it in a theater, and I understand why people hate it, especially if there's a specific thing you want out of an Alien movie. I'm able to divorce it from the other movies. And, like, I can find something to like in all four of them. Obviously, I think the first two are legitimately great, and then the other two, you gotta pick and choose kind of what what you like and what you don't. But I'm a fan of the series overall until the Predators start showing up. And then I'm less a fan of the series.
And then it becomes what did you call it? And you had something with like an alien buddy flick. That the first Aliens versus Predator.
It is. There's literally like a shot of the Predator and Sanaa Lathan running side by side in slow motion. Like they're fucking Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. Predator is just like, shit got real. I'm too old for that. I'm a Gamorrean guard. Save it.
And I guess last, I saw All This Mayhem, a documentary on Netflix I saw about the Pappas brothers. They were like, at one time, ranked number
one. You're
just
saying words right now.
Ranked one and two skateboarders in the world.
Okay.
From Australia.
I was three.
from Australia.
Damn, Doug was
and it's,
two.
It's about their like their rivalry with Tony Hawk, and about like a lot of those sports stories. It's about the rise of these kids and this fall that takes some pretty dark turns. So it was a super interesting documentary, but maybe the most interesting to me was like, I'm fascinated by that skate culture, because that was not me. I didn't know anything about it, but it's such a like fascinating time, and just how they were like rock stars. like in their own world, and how they just watch like these skate videos are so important to them, and they're showing like all these clips of old videos. Steve-O's in one of them. It was super interesting. Like I said, it takes a dark turn at the end, but it was, I don't know. I liked All This Mayhem. All
right,
Netflix.
I'll check it out.
And John Wick. But I talk about that, I think, every podcast. And every time that
did you watch it again? Like,
yeah, it's never, because it's always on HBO.
Oh, yeah, that's
and I
true.
Can't not.
Does your mom really like it? Like,
she loves John Wick, yeah.
That's so funny.
Because that movie's awesome.
That's true.
Every time I watch it, there's something really else.
Yeah.
I notice. Like, this I promise, I really didn't mean to talk about John Wick. But this last time I watched it, I was struck by Viggo, the main bad guy. When he finds out what his son does, and he's furious and beats the shit out of his son. And then what does he do? He calls John Wick to try to work it out first. Like, I've never seen that in a movie. I'm not saying you guys know action movies better than I do, but is there another action movie where the bad guy tries working it out first over the phone?
There might be, but yeah, I mean, again, they do such a good job of like
all those little moments.
Setting up like what a badass he is. They spend so much. And then at least actually deliver on when it's finally time to see him be a badass. You're like, oh, that's why everyone's afraid of him, because he shoots everyone in the head.
Everyone.
John Wick, they should put this on the poster. Like, John Wick is last year's Transporter Refueled. I'll say it. And you can put it on the poster. That's fine. You can quote me. Adam, how about you?
Well, because of my job, you guys all know that if something comes out in the month of May, I don't see it.
So, it's September, so we got a lot of ground to cover.
Yes. So, it's been talked about a lot. I'm just going to say, I saw Mad Max finally.
Oh.
I absolutely fucking love that movie.
Sure, yeah.
And to have...
Also, the sky is blue.
Yes, exactly.
And pizza is delicious. But, so, go ahead.
And we like Santa Claus. But
Take it easy.
The biggest endorsement I can give for it, though, is my wife is not a sci-fi person, we got done watching it, woke up the next morning, and she turned to me and she goes, I kind of want to watch Mad Max again. And I was like, I love that movie, and I love you more now.
That's awesome.
Really, because my wife hadn't seen it, we watched it this past week, too. And then the next morning, we woke up, and she chopped off her arm and shaved her head. So I'm not saying like it's cute.
That's what explains the Facebook
it's
photos.
Super cute that your wife wanted to rewatch it.
But where's her commitment?
Right,
exactly. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, sorry.
I don't know if you know this, but you know I do write for the Netflix this movie.
I do know that
on Fridays, and I
you're
take
very
that,
good about picking out like random obscure shit, which I appreciate.
I try very hard, and
you do a great job.
F this movie, folks. I just want you to know the level of shitty movies that I've had to go through to get to the obscure.
The one you can actually recommend,
But I watched on Heath Holland's recommendation, I watched Masters of the Universe.
Had you ever seen it?
I had seen it when I was a kid.
Okay.
And I remember not liking it as a kid because it wasn't anything like the TV show.
Really?
It takes place in, like, Earth.
Oh,
and
well,
I was like, this
that's
is
a,
bullshit, you know?
That's a cost-cutting measure.
Exactly, but I didn't understand that when I was a kid. I was just
I'd build Eternia, but we could just be like, oh, no, they go to L.A. Okay.
It's charming to me. I liked it. I enjoyed parts of it. I mean, it's definitely has its rough parts, but I think that it's kind of like a poor man's, like, Conan.
Masters
and,
of the Universe. Oh, yeah. No, go ahead.
And, it also kind of has a little bit of a Flash Gordon
feel
to it that I enjoyed that part of it, like, kind of the spectacle parts of Skeletor. So that was fun. And then I also
hate that little wizard dude.
Oh, he's
Billy Barty. He's like, they couldn't do Orko, so they came up with this Billy Barty wizard. I can't remember the character's name, but he's horrible.
Yeah, he's not good.
And there's a whole story about the making of that movie that is very interesting. Somebody was making like a documentary about Masters of the Universe, one of these fan documentaries, because everything has a fan documentary now. But at least Masters of the Universe, I think there's an interesting story because of the way that like it was essentially paid for by the toy company. It was essentially a commercial that they started running as an animated series for the toys. And then they made a movie into it, and
Canon, my beloved Canon films, were famous for not having the money that they thought they had, said they had, promised they would have. And literally while they were filming that movie, they just had it shut down. Like, they turned off the power and said, "You're done." And the director said, "Well, we haven't filmed the climax yet. Too bad, you're done." So somehow he's able to scrape up enough money. And so that weird thing where it's like the swords link together and then it's like two little people fighting. So that was like shot in a garage. That was like their workaround, because they're like, well, we need to have some sort of ending to this movie. So the battle takes place like, where, how do you even describe that? I don't know how to describe it. Like, their swords clink together.
There's a bright light.
Right. And Skeletor's wearing a different costume, and it's nuts. It was just, like, shot in a garage, and that was their big workaround. So, they were up against it on that movie, is all I'm saying.
I remember, well, now, my parents went to go, and it's those moments where you're like, wow, my parents really loved me. Like, I know that, my parents probably hated every second of that movie, but it took me to go see it.
Yeah.
It's like... and then the other one I saw was Girl Most Likely with Kristen Wiig.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which, it's not good.
Okay.
The movie's not good. But it... God, Kristen Wiig is so good in, like, everything I've seen her in. She's got this weird, like, way of walking this line between, like, funny and serious, and that almost comes off as this, like, controlled crazy that... She does it so well, and she's so good in that movie. She's the greatest reason to watch that movie, because there's a lot of jokes that fall very flat in that movie to me. So,
is it supposed to be a comedy? For some reason, I thought it was more of a drama. I don't know.
No, they're definitely trying to be funny in
quirky funny.
Yeah, like her brother. Yeah,
you see all the amount of disdain I said that with. Is that what you were laughing at?
If you could have seen it, his tongue came out the side and everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But no, there's like her brother like is obsessed with hermit crabs and like builds a hermit crab suit and it's not good.
Fuck you, movie.
And that's the part that
passed that shit. Mm-hmm. Like anyway, sorry.
No, it's just it ruins the movie because like Kristen Wiig does a great job with this character and. You know, she thought her dad was dead and like all this other stuff. And it's just so this drama part of it where she's quirky enough that it's kind of funny. But then they try and make it into a comedy and it just doesn't work.
All right. Anything else?
No, I'm good.
Okay. I'll try to go through mine quick. Took my kids today to see Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown. About as good as Bon Voyage, Charlie Brown, Don't Come Back. Like, it's fine. Held their attention enough. I didn't love it. I'm still excited about the Peanuts movie that comes out in November. Oh, yeah. I have high hopes for that. You know, these movies are fine.
How long is it?
It's like 80 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It feels longer.
Yeah.
But it's about 80 minutes, I would guess. Last night, my wife and I went to the Redbox and rented Unfriended. Either of you see Unfriended?
No, but I thought of it this weekend about renting it.
Oh, as you were unfriending people on Facebook? Exactly. Somebody should make this into a... Wait a minute.
It's a documentary about me.
It's interesting. Like, I would never want to see it again, and I never want to see another movie told that way. Because, again, the whole movie is told from, like, the screen of a computer.
Yeah.
And it just is constantly clicking on new windows and new screens and opening this up. And it made me nervous because I realized that, like, this is how young people process information now. I can't keep up with it.
Right.
And this is what they're doing. Like, how do you focus on any one thing when you have 20 windows open and you keep switching? And they're trying to do it as a way of, like, advancing the plot. I give them a ton of credit for the amount of exposition they're able to get across by telling the story that way. I thought a lot of the movie worked. I had very low expectations. I thought a lot of it worked. I think it shits the bed, as most horror movies do in the end. This one to a pretty significant degree, I think. It's a bit of a trend I've noticed actually in Blumhouse movies, but okay. But I liked enough of it to recommend it.
Oh, cool.
I was expecting garbage. and it was not garbage.
All right.
I can't imagine watching it in a theater, just again because of the way that it's told. Yeah. Although, you know, so much of it actually takes place in silence, which I give it credit for. Yeah. There's no score or anything, and I think in a theater that actually would have played really well.
Yeah.
Now I kind of want to see this.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm like interested now.
Yeah, check it out. Okay. You know, whatever. Otherwise,
did Erica like it?
She did. Yeah. Okay. At one point, she said like, "Oh, this is kind of like." We sat down expecting to kind of roll our eyes at it, and she, I can always tell when she's into a movie because she stops doing five other things, you know, and just will actually pay attention. And so I noticed that she had stopped, you know, checking her phone and playing that some Frozen game on her iPad and whatever, and was just watching, and she goes, this is kind of working for me. And she said, if I was a kid and I saw this, like, this is the kind of movie that really would have, affected me and my two friends when they used to, her and her two friends used to watch horror movies all the time when they would have sleepovers and stuff. So, she said that really would have worked on
her. Tell us more about these sleepovers.
I'll get to it. then I mostly just, again, still been watching, Wes Craven stuff. I revisited Vampire in Brooklyn and it's still not very good. It is a very confused movie. Like,
I've never seen it.
It's on Netflix.
Okay.
I don't recommend it. Eddie Murphy is part of the problem with the movie. It has this broad, weird comedy. It has, like, horror stuff. It has this weird, like, gothic romance. It's a very confused movie, and I don't even blame Wes Craven because I know he got kind of steamrolled on it.
Yeah.
And I revisited Scream 4, which should make Heather happy.
Uh-huh. We don't make her happy if you feel any differently.
I mean, I think I enjoyed it more than when I saw it the first time. And again, this has everything to do with expectations. Because when I saw it the first time, it was like, I got my hopes up. New Wes Craven movie, Scream 4, Kevin Williamson's back.
Yep.
I'm excited about, you know, whole cast is back. I'm excited about this. And then I didn't think the movie worked. Now I'm going into it like, I already know that I don't really like this, so I could be pleasantly surprised when I'm like, that stuff's a little bit better, you know?
Okay.
But I was thinking about, because I also watched Scream with the commentary track on for something else that I'm doing, and Wes Craven talks about in the scene where spoilers for Scream, in the scene where Henry Winkler gets killed as the principal, he points out, like, that Henry Winkler was kind of like a comic character or whatever, but in that moment you really feel for him because he's very scared and horrified, and it seems like it hurts getting stabbed in the chest a bunch of times, I can only assume. And he says, you can't try to be funny when people are dying. Like, the only way to make this work is to treat it seriously. So that thought is going through my head as I'm watching Scream 4. And again, minor spoilers for Scream 4. Do you guys remember the scene with the two cops, Anthony Anderson and Seth from the OC?
I remember
those
very
movies
little.
Like kind of all start to
Adam blend. Brody, that's his name, Adam Brody. yeah, they do. So they're Anthony Anderson in particular, again, spoilers for Scream 4, is this cop, and he gets stabbed in the head and then stumbles around for probably 10 feet, and before he dies says, fuck Bruce Willis, and he dies, and it's a callback to this other thing. But like, now they're making jokes as they're dying, and that's a big part of why that movie doesn't work for me.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I don't think I realized that the first time because I hadn't heard it articulated that way. I don't know. But better than I remember, still deeply problematic. Okay. Very deeply problematic. Anyway, so that's what we've seen. Let's talk about Private Parts.
Well, wait, I also saw,
you heard of this
movie Turbo Kid?
I have heard of Turbo Kid.
Yeah, I saw it.
Did you like it?
It's good.
It is good. I'm a fan of it as well.
Maybe it doesn't seem like you'd like Turbo Kid.
No, you don't think so?
No, it doesn't seem
there's one or two things in there that I responded to.
No, Turbo Kid's great.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Private Parts?
Yeah, we
can talk about this is your idea. You want to take the lead?
I thought we're talking about our top five.
Oh, go ahead.
Movies.
Number one, Private Parts.
Let's start there.
Yeah, you know, I just know that movie is important to me in a couple ways, in the sense that that was the movie that I started listening to Howard Stern because of that movie. I wasn't a fan of Howard Stern before that movie, and now I'm is a huge part of my life. I listen to him every single morning. I listen to the reruns on my way to work every single morning. I'm sitting here right now with two other people that are I'm very close friends with, and we talk about Howard Stern all the time. So it's really a big part of my life, and this movie has been so affected by that. You were the one who brought it up to me. You were like, hey, you should watch this movie, Private Parts. Like, because if you're not from the Chicagoland area, there was this guy in the...
And don't judge us.
Yeah, don't judge us.
Oh, we were judging the shit out of the two of you. We know
you will.
Yeah,
we're telling everyone else.
We were in high school. You're there
horrible
was,
people.
There was a guy, a local guy named Mancow.
He's syndicated enough that people might be familiar with him outside of this area.
So we were... When Mancow first came around, we were really, really into him. Like, we waited in line to go get the CD... signed by him and everything. We loved Mancow. If you could see the look of judgment on Patrick's face.
Just left.
At any point, did one of you, and I know you were young and whatever, but at any point, did one of you step back and be like, whoa, wait a second. He's a grown man. He calls himself Mancow?
No.
Let's step out of this line.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
It made perfect sense as a teenager,
It didn't.
I was a teenager. Weren't very too. Smart, Patrick.
I was a teenager. He was very popular. I have always thought he was garbage.
But then we eventually started getting out. We weren't listening to Mancow as much. And then Private Parts came out, and we saw Private Parts, and it was all of a sudden this moment where we're like, oh, this Mancow guy is just ripping off this guy who's way better at this.
And so you guys were huge Bush fans, and then you were like, what's Nirvana? You bought a Nirvana CD, and you're like, oh, shit. I get it.
So, I've watched Private Parts multiple times. It's on VH1 all the time.
That's
so,
the way to watch it.
Yeah, right? But no, I have it on DVD. But it's one of those movies where it's on VH1, and it's like all of a sudden... You know, I find myself watching 20, 25 minutes of the movie at a time. So, I figured we're all Howard Stern's fans here. Pardon me if I do some sound effect drops in the background.
Yeah, Adam and I share, I mean, we have the same story. Just, we're Mancow fans. But Mancow would talk about Stern. He hated Stern. And Stern didn't like him. I mean, Stern barely paid him any attention, it turns out. But, you know, the little bit of attention he did pay him, he didn't like Mancow. So I think we were like, you know, didn't know anybody. We didn't know Stern, but we were like, oh, fuck that guy. Like, Mancow doesn't like him. Fuck Stern. But we rented Private Parts. And yes, the very same reaction by the end of that movie. We're like, oh, we made a mistake.
This movie is great, and this guy seems hysterical.
Right, so.
So
we started listening to Stern, and we used to like, and then we started college, and we used to drive together to the train, and we would listen to Stern on the way to the train. That was only like our 15-minute, God forbid it started a commercial.
Oh, because the commercial breaks then were 15 minutes
right,
long.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly, and then the E! Show was really big for us, and then, like Adam said, he's become a very big part of my life. That show's become a very big part of my life. This is the same story a lot of people could tell, but I listen to Stern a lot at work, and I have some shitty days at work like everybody else does. And it's so great. Like, you know, my boss might be a dickhead to me, and I go back to my office and can hear some, you know, phony phone call.
Or, sour.
Right. I mean, he's much more than that. He also means a lot to me in that, like Adam brought up before, when, like, I'm with Adam, and when we're with Patrick or Doug, we can, like, we talk to one another in Howard Stern quotes.
Right.
Like, it's such a fabric of our...
That's true. We will call each other and say, hello, hello.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, hello. Which is, like, two steps removed, because it's a Gary reference done as I pitch. Right, exactly.
Sorry.
Anyway.
I think years ago you had us write around Thanksgiving, like movies that you're thankful for.
Yeah.
Private Parts was one of mine. Because, again, big part of my life, big part of my friend's life, something we all bond over. And I think it's a really great movie.
I'm interested, too, that you guys saw enough in the movie to convince you to listen to the radio show, because they're really different things.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But it really was, like, we're not exaggerating. By the end of that movie, like, that movie turned us. Obviously, we were dummies. Yeah. that has been established. But really, but by the end of that movie, we both turned to each other and said, oh, we should probably try this guy. And by then, he was on in Chicago.
Right.
Because there were years where he wasn't.
Right. He was, and then he wasn't, and then he was again.
Right.
Yeah, because the bits that he does in the movie are pretty hacky, because they're covering, like, when he was in the 80s. Yeah, and
correct.
Exactly. Again, when you listen to that stuff now, you're just like, how did this guy ever become popular? These are... And I understand, at the time, nobody else was doing that, so it was revolutionary. But, like, now when I hear the bits from the 80s where everybody's clapping, and it's just, like...
It drives me crazy.
Voices, and I Love Lucy parodies, and it's just like, why? Who? How is this funny to anyone?
But the movie showed a side of Howard... and the people around him that is so endearing, and what, like, it's to me is what his show is. You know, what am I trying
to say? It's like watching listening to the life of a dysfunctional family every single day, and like, then
that's why people listen to this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not like the radio bits.
I'm the abusive dad who makes fun of people.
He hits us
for listening to Man Cow.
But it's not like the radio bits that they do in the movie is what drew me to listen to
it. Right. You know, that's what I think is interesting, is that it was the other stuff that is a kind of unrelated. You know what I mean? Like, you became interested in him as a personality, as opposed to like, oh, those radio bits seem really funny.
Right.
So I have my story is a little bit different, because I came to the movie as a Stern fan and went to see it. Not even opening day, the night before, they added a couple, like, 10 o'clock screenings or something.
I was about to say, because every podcast, somebody brings up a movie, and you're like, oh, I saw that opening day. I was about to be like, if you didn't see Private Parts opening day, I can't wait to hear
it. It was not before opening day.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's right.
I feel bad. You know what I didn't listen to on the way there? Mankind. So I drove to... My brother was, like, working the late shift at my dad's convenience store, and we got maybe somebody to cover his shift for a couple hours so he could go, because he was a huge Stern fan, too. He might even have been part of why I listened. I can't remember if he turned me on to it or what, but we were both fans. So we go, and we were positive that, like, well, it's going to be out of control, because having listened to Stern, you're just like, everyone loves this guy. This movie's going to be a phenomenon. And we get there, and it was like, you know, it's like a third full, maybe half. And again, it was with all, like, diehard fans, so it was fun. When people would show up on screen, we would cheer, and, like, John's thing at the end got such a reaction.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a fun experience of seeing it in that audience, but it was very different, like, what I had built up in my head, that, like, this is going to be the biggest thing ever. And then you get there, and you're like, no, man, people are... And I just... He was just, he's never going to be, like, huge in Chicago, you know? Like, he was never going to be. Chicago is very loyal to Chicago people, you know? But, yeah, so I was always a fan. So I had already read the book. I think I had read Miss America had come out by then. So I had read both books already. And so knew the story. And, yeah, it's a movie. It's interesting because... It was the movie that, for a lot of people, I think, it didn't necessarily make them Howard Stern fans, but it was like, oh, he's not the guy I thought he was, or he's at least capable of faking it to seem like this nice, normal guy.
Right.
And so many of the reviews and so many of the reactions were more of, like, surprise than they were like, oh, yeah, that was actually a good movie, because everybody's expecting, I don't know what, just filth and garbage. And so everyone was like, there was a weird tone to the reactions. It was always, yeah, I'm really surprised. That was actually good. Like, okay, yeah.
The same reaction people have when they see him on, like, you know, America's Got Talent. Like,
right.
He's actually a very nice man. And, right, yes, he is.
Right. And again, you know, that's a hard thing to prove to people if they're not listening or whatever. And especially he had such a reputation in the 80s and 90s for being just crazy and saying horrible things. And he would go on the Tonight Show and have strippers and prostitutes with him. Right. And it's like, that's what people saw.
He has a video.
And then you get mad at him.
Yeah. Like Butt Bongo Fiesta. Yeah,
there are several Butt Bongo videos. Right. Yeah. And so then I would, hear stuff like that, and I would get mad at him. I'm just like, you are not helping.
Yeah, right, mm-hmm. exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to tell people that, like, oh, but that's not the show, right. and, like, you're doing this right. instead.
Exactly.
So that was frustrating. But the movie is good, right?
Oh, I think it's very good.
I'm jealous of you in the sense that when I first saw it, you know, I'm watching...
You were a Mancow fan?
Well, yes, I'm a Mancow yeah. fan, but also, like,
Gary's... And I wasn't, so you're yes. jealous. No, yes. I get it.
But it's also the sense that, like, Gary's in the movie, and, you know, Stuttering John...
That
and,
stuff
and
didn't, like, mean anything
I had
to
no
you.
Idea right. who these guys were right. watching it.
Right, I was just gonna say that. I'm really jealous hearing about that theater experience, because I rewatched it last night with my wife, and I feel like... Every time Gary came on, or Crackhead Bob, or somebody, yeah, I, to right. myself, I'm like, woohoo! Yeah,
Dicky Dimane!
Right. Like, I'm ass. Oh, she's like, did my voice sound?
Did my voice sound?
No, it's very feminine. Yeah. Let's talk about the acting, actually, because I want to jump to that. You know, the movie is weird in the sense, and I didn't have time to look it up. I know that there are a few other movies where... people play themselves in their own life stories, right?
Yeah.
What are a few? Muhammad Ali is the greatest specifically oh. about... Is it... Or is he playing like a fictional version of himself? That's, I've never
I,
seen
I,
it.
I haven't seen
okay.
it.
Okay. There's a baseball player?
Right now trying to rack my brains. I can't think of one right now.
No, there's a few. I'm sure that there's a few of like, I'm playing myself in my own... life story. Uh-huh. Neil Diamond like sort of does in The Jazz Singer, but again, it's like a fictionalized
yeah.
version of him. He's not called Neil Diamond, you know?
Yeah.
So here's Stern, not just playing like a disc jockey rising up through the ranks. He's actually Howard Stern, you know? And everyone is themselves. And so those Gary segments. Okay. what I really like about the movie, besides the fact that just I think it's funny and I like Stern and he comes across very likable and his story is interesting and Mary McCormick, who plays his wife, is really good and she comes across as very you like him more because of her,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And then, of course, now you watch it and you're just like, well, the whole thing's a fucking lie because yeah. they split up just a few years later. And yeah. Stern talks about that on the show, just like how uncomfortable he gets when he sees the movie now, and it's all just this love letter to his marriage, which fell apart. So I like it for all those reasons. But one of the reasons that I really like it, and the only other movie that is coming to mind right now, well, Annie Hall does some of this. I'm not comparing Private Parts to Annie Hall, but Annie Hall does this. There's Something About Mary is the other movie that comes to mind. The first time I saw There's Something About Mary, one of the things that I really loved about it was the way that it just kind of breaks certain rules.
Yeah.
It has the guy come in and play the songs in between, and comedies weren't really doing that, you know, mm-hmm. and Private Parts does that. It mixes like he's talking directly to camera.
Yep.
There's voiceover, there's flashbacks. Then we get those things in between with Gary where he's break.
Which I love. It,
yeah. It kind of plays with the form and breaks a lot of rules. And I don't know. I really like that. Years ago when Doug was in college, he was entering this contest where he had to make a movie, and so he and I kind of made this thing together, and we entered it into a student film festival. Yeah, did we win? Of course. Yeah, did we beat all of DePaul and Columbia? Yeah, that's fine. But the point is this:
Columbia was shit. Anyway.
Yeah, well.
We didn't really realize what we were doing, and then I think Doug was the one who pointed it out after the fact. He was like, "Oh, we kind of just were." Influenced by Private Parts because it's this mix of like on-camera interview, voiceover, straight to the camera, traditional narration. Yeah, and we didn't realize that that's what we were doing, but I think he had watched Private Parts and he was like, yeah, we made Private Parts basically. The way that it mixes all these different kind of forms together. I don't know. I really like that. So the Gary stuff I really love because he's so natural in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's to all of their credit. I think they're all actually really natural.
Absolutely.
I think every once in a while I can catch Robin acting.
I agree.
But yeah. She's still good.
Yeah.
She's still really good.
I watched it today and like she was one of them that I was like watching and like there's some great scenes with her in it.
Yeah.
Like,
when they fight, it's really
yeah.
good.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And somebody once told me that I can't remember who it was, but I had said that I thought Stern gives a really good performance and they said, well, he's playing himself. How hard could that be? But I think that's what do I know? But I think that's super hard. Especially like in moments where he needs to be vulnerable or not, you know.
Well,
do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, absolutely. No. And a lot of people I think would tell you, well, that's way harder. And other people would say, no, creating a character from scratch is way harder. So none of us, I don't think, are actors unless one of you...
I played Spider-Man in one of his student films. That's about it.
I'm sorry, what?
I played Spider-Man in a
Spider-Man. I thought you said Spider-Man.
No, Spider-Man.
You did say Spider-Man.
And I thought, was this some sort of parody on Spider-Man? when you guys were like in between setups and shots, like what would be on the radio as you were
probably at that time it was
The Blaze?
Yeah.
Oh, Man Cow's
From
morning,
the top of the cock.
Man Cow's morning madhouse.
Yes. Douche. No, we were well into Stern at that point.
Douche.
Yes, we were into Stern at that point. That was college.
But I actually that's one of those things watching today, just talking about college, is the like watching Howard Stern's student film that I know that's not his student film that he actually made, but I'm like chuckling to myself like that it has to be intentional that it kind of feels like this douchey student film.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I loved that feeling about it, and I'm giggling to myself watching this.
I mean, and he won that film contest, and usually it's like the douchiest films are the ones that win those college. Right. I mean, like you and Doug.
Let's see what you did there.
Oh, came back with a zinger.
Yeah, wow, that almost makes up for years of listening to Man Cow. So people would say one's harder than the other. I don't know, because do you play it like the way that I remember it happening? Are you playing yourself, you know?
Right.
Well, this is how I remember being, or do you do what works for the movie? And I like, you know, for as egomaniacal as he is, obviously he's very self-deprecating on the radio, and that the movie is also very self-deprecating to the extent where that last shot post-credits of him, like, falling at the Academy Awards is just a great joke about how everyone feels about Howard Stern. You know, he makes himself the butt of the joke and kind of rallies everyone to think it's okay to like the movie because, well, he's beating himself up, so it's okay for us to like him, too. I don't know. It's interesting.
I do love that. I love when
Mia Farrow.
Mia Farrow, right. When she announces
his
name.
How's that not an endorsement?
And there's literally no applause. Like, <that's>,
Howard Stern?
I remember watching that Fartman bit on MTV, and again, just like, you are not helping.
Right.
Why are you doing all of these things?
But that's such a great, like, I love that scene, too, because right after it, he's walking backstage, and it's just, you know, he just got all his famous friends in there, but it's just so great, the looks everybody's giving him, and it
how
ends.
How insecure he is.
Yep. And they keep zooming in on his face, and like and then they'll zoom out and show him in the costume, and it's back in on his face, and just that moment when Ozzy Osbourne looks at him and he's like, "What a fucking jerk!" And you're just like, "Oh, that's so great."
When I was a kid, my favorite thing to do with my friends was get together on the weekends and get a stack of movies and have sleepovers and watch movies all night. Did you guys used to do that? You guys have been friends for a long time.
Also, when we weren't listening to the Man Cow Show.
Yes.
You're terrible people.
Yeah, no, that was the best.
Yeah, it was mostly horror movies.
Well, here's the thing. We wanted to see boobs.
Yes.
And we knew if we rented horror movies, not only is it awesome we're getting to rent horror movies, but we probably see boobs. For a while, like when we were younger, our moms would have to take us. If we went with my mom, like we'd get two movies. One would be a horror movie, and then we would try to go, like maybe we'll try to find some drama that might have, you know, some boobs or something.
We were crafty, man.
Right. But like if we went with my mom,
it was easy, crazy, man. Right. Your mom just be like, oh, this looks fun.
Yeah. Oh, 9.5 weeks. Never
caged heat.
Right.
That Shannon tweed seems lovely.
Right, exactly. But Adam's mom was a little trickier. So we would have to find a title that didn't sound like it would have boobs, but we'd have to go by the box and be like, oh, okay, this looks like it has potential. So like one time we found this movie called You Gotta Have Heart.
Yeah.
That, oh my God, did we hit the motherfucking
jackpot. It was payload. It was like timed it out. Like, you know how like an action movie needs to have an action fight scene?
What kind
scene?
Of a movie is this?
It's
terrible.
an Italian rom-com, I guess you would call it, about like a man who just gets married and he can't get it up for his wife. And everyone's having sex around them and they're all trying to get him to get it up. It's just amazing. Even the trailer for the movie before the movie
is like some
nudity in it.
It was like some girl like I just remember she's like in the middle of like a farm and she's like sprayed down by a hose. Yes. And we're like, yes!
We're like high fiving in the trailer.
You're talking about Yentl.
Yentl.
I don't think Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers has ever done a podcast on You Gotta Have Heart.
Nope.
But there's still time.
Yeah, hey.
So if you guys don't know, there's a podcast called Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers, hosted by Dion and Jay Blake. Every week they get together, they're old film school friends, and they talk about movies that, you know, they consider sleepover-worthy movies. So it's a lot of horror movies, action movies, 80s stuff, some 90s stuff. Sometimes it gets pretty esoteric, like The Trial of the Incredible Hulk. Did you guys watch that one?
Yeah.
I remember when that aired because I was so excited. It was like one of the last Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno Hulk movies. And I knew Daredevil was in it because some of those NBC movies, they were bringing in other superheroes. So like Thor was in one.
Okay.
And it was garbage Daredevil, although he does look a lot like the first incarnation of the Netflix Daredevil, where it's just black spandex.
Okay. Awesome.
But he's on trial, so naturally Matt Murdock is his attorney.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they did a podcast on that. This week, they've got a podcast on The Last Starfighter, Adam.
Hey, one of my favorites.
One of your favorites. And so that is like a sleepover classic. You know, their show is, it's a lot like ours. It's a little bit different. You should check it out and see for yourself. They've done shows on the original Dolph Lundgren Punisher. They've done Flight of the Navigator, Weekend at Bernie's, Mind Warp with Bruce Campbell and Angus Scrimm. Did you ever see that?
I have not seen that one.
It's like the first Fangoria production. We can literally watch it after we record this week's episode.
Hey, no.
Because we're having our own movie sleepover tonight. But they cover all the bases. So as soon as you're done listening to our show, go over and check out Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers, hosted by Dion and Jay Blake. They're at saturdaysleepovers.podwitz.com, or you can click the link on our site, fthismovie.net. We have a little banner that'll take you right to their site. You can follow them on Facebook or on Twitter, subscribe to them on iTunes, listen to them on Player FM, Stitcher. It's free. It's a ton of fun. You'll learn a lot about movies. You'll remember the fun of having movie sleepovers. Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers. It's a sleepover for your ears.
I think what I love the most upon future watchings of the movie is like it feels a lot like a documentary, and I feel like it. You were right in saying that it takes.
You
some
had
stuff
me from, at you were right.
Yes, it takes some stuff from Annie Hall in the sense that it feels a lot like that, but then it also feels like it's taking a little bit from Spinal Tap. To me,
okay.
Like this kind of rock and roll documentary type feeling to it, where there's a lot of interviews with, like, you know, Mary McCormick, but who's supposed to be his wife and his parents, and like these people are just kind of telling a little bit about Howard and like the people who are closest to him, and it, and even the stuff with Gary in it, it just feels so much like a documentary that I was almost upset the more I learned about it to know that some of those things didn't happen, that like Pig Virus isn't a real, well, he's based off
he
of two people,
right?
You know, it's like two people who became one,
right.
So I remember like when I started getting to know a little bit more about Stern, I was like, oh, that's not real. It convinced me it was a documentary. Yeah. You know,
and do you guys know why he's Pig Virus
instead of Pig Vomit?
Yeah, it's Pig Vomit in the movie.
Right.
And he's Pig. Right.
Right. No, I don't. I don't know the story there.
To change it.
I have no idea. Go ahead.
Let's talk about Paul Giamatti, who is incredible in this movie.
I feel like this was the movie that put him on a lot of people's radar.
Yeah.
I don't know how much he had done before this. I know that same summer, like, I saw him in The Negotiator,
right.
And, like, he started popping up and stuff. But, yeah, this was, you walked away from Private Parts like, oh, turns out I like Stern. I'm not going to listen to Mancome anymore. but also, like, who is that guy?
Yeah,
who is Paul Giamatti?
Which is why when he was on Stern, Stern said, if you ever win an Oscar, you better thank me in your speech. He's like, you have to promise you'll thank me because I believe Giamatti talked about it. It was like, that is the movie that
kind of broke
him.
Yeah.
He's such a good dickhead in that movie, and just got that slight
so
Southern
good.
Accent that he puts on is just so good in this movie.
Yeah.
My favorite scene that he does is actually, during the end credits, when he finally has his breakdown.
Motherfucking Antichrist!
I noticed, though, when I was watching it, it's one of these little scenes, and when they're doing the WNBC, mm-hmm. like it starts out on a tilt.
Yeah, the camera.
Like yeah. Howard's above him, yeah. and then by the end of it, it tilts the other way.
I don't love that.
Okay, I didn't know how you felt about it.
To me, that's, and I like a lot of what Betty Thomas does, because again, I think she's inventive with the form in a way that doesn't call attention to itself. That shot to me calls attention to itself. It's like, look, I'm using a visual representation of the shifting power dynamic. And it's like, yeah, no, we got it, Betty Thomas. We don't need, you tilting the camera for us to understand the subtext of this mm-hmm. scene. That's a nitpick, obviously, because I'm a fan of the movie overall.
And that scene.
No, WNBC yeah. is like, that's one of the
That's like a famous
bits.
Scene. Yeah. They'll play that on the
But stage. I find myself quoting just random lines from, every once in a while I'll be like, I did some summer stock.
You're right.
Just randomly.
Well, you just quoted the, you're the motherfucking Antichrist.
Oh, we say that all the time.
Yeah. About me, do you guys say it?
Yeah, usually. Patrick, he's the motherfucking Antichrist!
What else? What do you think of Fred in the movie?
Fred's great in the movie.
Again, like not being fans, the first appearance of Fred...
I thought he was...
Huge cheers, and then especially later on when the car pulls away and he's standing there...
That is such a great scene.
I mean, the theater exploded. Oh, that's like... Again, if you're a fan of the show at the time, nobody was talking about Mankow.
Which leads me to the I love the music. I love the use of music in that movie. I know you're a big AC/DC fan, Patrick, so you must have.
Yeah, when they get brought out at the end, there's that scene is hard for me to watch. Because just Gary's like clapping out of beat and Stern's wig is so out of control. Actually, at that point, it might not even be his wig. It might just be like his real long hair and his ridiculous long purple robe. And just like, and that's one of those things. That's actually some of the most interesting stuff in his career. And you couldn't make a movie out of it necessarily, but the Radio Wars kind of like when he would go to a town and just decimate the current number one mm-hmm. disc jockey
and then do a funeral
right yeah. And that's kind of what that scene at the end is representing, all of those at the same time, but you don't get the same, and it wouldn't paint him in a positive light, like right. I kind of understand why they didn't put that in the movie, because you wouldn't walk away from it being like, what a good guy. You'd be like, wow, he's a psycho
yeah
who must be number one no matter what. But yeah, that's, you know, it's not one of my favorite scenes. I don't know if I could pick a favorite scene.
Oh God, there's so many good ones. I think watching it again, I love the fight between him and Pig Vomit, where they're on the phone and he's like doing a play by play and hits him in the face.
I hit him again, Robin.
I hit him again. Like it's so great, because then they're like cutting back to the, and you get to see like Fred, who's like get them back on the air, and
seems genuinely furious.
Yeah,
when he screams,
and it leads up to it with that. Yeah,
Most of the scenes with Pig Vomit. I love when he calls Pig Vomit's wife while Pig Vomit is in the bathroom, and when Pig Vomit hears it, like Paul Giamatti does like this little like he's hopping up and down, like he's trying to hurry up and finish. It makes me laugh every goddamn time. Just that little motion. God, I don't know if I could pick a favorite scene.
Well, but I was going to ask, like, do you need to even be a fan of Howard Stern to appreciate the movie? But I guess you guys already answered that because you weren't.
Yeah, we were not. And it's just interesting to me. Like, I'll show that. I showed that movie to my wife too. She had never seen it, and she was like, "Oh, how did?" And then I had Sirius Radio in my car, and she would like be excited whenever she'd be able to drive my car. She's like, "Oh, I listened to Howard. This is what happened on Howard today." And it was like, "Okay, this movie made another fan out of somebody." So,
well, I think it's interesting too that I think it makes him accessible, you know, as a person, and it's a love story with his wife, and blah blah blah. But it doesn't completely sell out the things that he was known for, you know, being outrageous or whatever. You get that whole Jenna Jameson sequence at the end of the movie where, no, she's really head to toe naked through that whole scene. So it's not, they definitely soft pedal some of that, because I think there's versions of this movie that would have been much more kind of raunchy.
Yeah.
And so as you're watching it, you don't feel, it doesn't feel lascivious or anything. You're not just like, ugh. But at the same time, those elements are there, that they didn't just try to completely rewrite who he is or what he became known for.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I really like the scenes with he and Allison as well, his wife Allison.
I was going to ask you, like, what do we think about, like, him and Mary McCormick in the movie?
Great. Like, Patrick said it almost. I think she's so good in it.
She is. She's so good. And he's best, I think, in his scenes with her.
Yeah.
Except for the scenes where he's on the radio, which, I mean, obviously he's good when he's on the radio.
That's what he does.
Yeah, right. So that's going to be easy. But I even like his bad radio and that noise he makes when he first, like, drops all the records.
Welcome to WCCC.
Comical, ridiculous noise. But the scene after she miscarries and he's trying to make her feel better, yeah, like, is very, very natural. Yes. And I think that's hard to do for a guy who's not an actor. Again, none of these people are actors.
Right, exactly.
And it does make me curious, could they then have gone on and acted in other stuff? I mean, I know Fred has a little bit. He's a doorman in Cruel Intentions, which I remember seeing that. I'm like, was that Fred? You know, they've done, Robin was on The Fresh Prince.
Yeah, Stuttering John is in Dude, Where's My Car?
Stuttering John wrote and directed a movie called, National Lampoon's One Too Many, about a guy trying to have a threesome. It will give you 90 minutes of douche chills. I watched it. It used to be on Netflix. You can look for it. I want to say Susanna is in it, too. She might have, like, a small part, but they are no longer together either. You know who's not in it is Nicolas Cage.
But what's the movie that
Pamela Anderson, yeah,
Jackie Martling's in with the senator who's like, you work for that prick Howard Stern?
He's in two, because he's in a movie called Ghoul School where he just does a weird, like, public access show with Joe Franklin.
You reviewed that movie, didn't
I'm
you?
I'm quoted on the DVD box. I sure am. My quote is, has to be seen to be believed, which was not in a positive context when I said it in my review. The last line of that review was, I hate my life. It was for DVD Verdict, and at the end you're supposed to give the verdict, and my verdict was, I hate my life. And my editor at the time emailed me after he read that. He said, I just want you to know I fell out of my chair when I read that. Well, my work here is done. But I don't know that other movie, that other Jackie movie, because Nancy is in Ghoul School. Her band is in it, and she has, like, a leading role.
Oh, my God, we have to see this movie now.
No, you don't. No, that's the reason I wanted to review it. I asked to review it because I'm like, well, Nancy's in it, so I have to check it out. So I don't know that they could have gone on to, you know, could Stern play a different part? I know he's come close a few times. Yeah. He was going to be in Man of the Year.
Yes, he was.
That ended up being made with Robin Williams, mm-hmm, where, like, that comedian runs for president or is elected president. I've never seen it because life's too short. And there was another movie that he, like, had signed on for where he was going to be some sort of music executive. Melanie Griffith was supposed to be in it, and that fell through. Okay. That was post Private Parts as well. So there, things have come up here and there, but it had never happened. And, you know, I don't even totally blame him for being like, you know what, I did this one.
Oh, yeah.
And it got really, you know, I think he only stands to lose by doing another one, sure, you know, because everybody liked this one and said, well, you're really good in it. You know, I think he's, obviously the joke is that he's his biggest fan, but I think he's actually kind of serious when he says that he thinks he should have been nominated for an Oscar for that movie. And I do not agree with that.
Do you know he did win an award though?
Like Blockbuster
the,
Award. Yes,
the Blockbuster Award.
Yeah, he did.
Hysterical.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I back to Mary McCormick though, like,
yeah, no, I'll talk about Mary McCormick, yeah, all day, yeah.
She's gorgeous,
yeah, and,
but also what I that the argument scene though, going back to the,
yeah,
the with the miscarriage
after he does the bit on the radio,
yeah, after, yeah, he does the bit about, yeah, the miscarriage on the radio, that's another great moment where Robin says, like, while they're doing it, we shouldn't be talking about this. And they keep going anyway. Like, her being kind of the female in the situation, right, knows, like, you guys are really crossing a line here. And then, like, yeah. Yeah, and he gets back home, and that argument is so real to me.
Yeah.
I've had those arguments with, you know, ex-girlfriends.
When they're mad about something you say on the radio?
Well, no, but, like, where you don't understand what you did wrong, and you're kind of just, and they're furious, and you're like, oh, Well, okay. I don't know how I'm going to resolve this situation. I've done that plenty of times. but you know, it's such a real...
Say something on the podcast that'll start a fight.
Yeah, right? No, I'm not going to do that. Would There's you? A good chance my wife may listen to this
one. Okay. She's the best. She is. Yeah, no, the way he explodes at her at the end of it, where he's, I'm not going to make any money or whatever. Yeah. Like it seems to come from a, you know, place of genuine frustration.
Oh yeah.
I can't think of very many movies that have been made just about radio. Again, at the time it just seemed so narcissistic, and I know this movie took forever. They went through so many drafts and so many different directors, and for the longest time it was going to be a Fartman movie, and thank goodness that didn't happen, and what a bullet we dodged from not having a Fartman movie. So I'm glad if he's going to make a movie, it's kind of his life story. But it's just like, you very rarely hear of somebody, you know, even Oprah Winfrey didn't do like the Oprah Winfrey story, and here's how I got famous on TV, because that's this movie. Like, here's how I changed radio and got super famous. Which on paper
is super douchey,
right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially when it's about radio, which is just not a particularly cinematic subject, you know. Right. And there aren't that many movies made about radio, right? Talk radio, straight talk. I'm sure there's a few others. Truth About Cats and Dogs sort of is about radio because she's a pet therapist or something. I don't know.
Well, the radio stuff I like in this one. Is I loved when he was like at the small markets, like when he first goes into Detroit and there's the, you know,
Duke of Rock,
the Duke of Rock, who I didn't know is like a real famous voiceover guy. I didn't know
the guy who plays the Duke of Rock, Oh, really?
Yeah, so
can't be good, maybe be bad,
like, love it. But and he's sitting there like making fun of him, and it was just like you see those moments because it happens a few times in the movie where they're just kind of in this house. That happens to have a radio, and they're just passing each other in the hallway. And you know, when we were growing up, at least for me, you kind of thought like, oh, these radio stations, all these guys must know each other and hang out with each other. But they're just
like
know,
the Blaze, like late at night,
all
where they just hang out. Mancow like did a TV show after Stern's show was on E for such a long time.
No, I watched it once; it was awful.
They're just like standing up in a bit in like
that's
a closet.
How he stands up.
Is that because he's just like so intense?
No, he's
just like,
he's...
I can't sit, man.
I think what it was.
I gotta speak the truth.
Yeah.
About guns.
Yeah.
Or whatever. He's like super right wing now.
Yeah, he is.
He wants to. Yeah. But
that's where you find an audience.
I feel like it was. He got. Stern had enough money and everything when he did the E show that it was like it was a set and like everybody was spread out. And I just feel like his was so low budget that it's like, let's try and fit everybody in frame here, guys. This is the size of our studio, and, like, everybody's really close to
it. It might
still
be on, like, in the mornings.
Mancow's?
Yeah. It used to run just on, like, late Saturday nights, you know, against Saturday Night Live or the Stern CBS show.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Which was a disappointment.
What do you guys think of the beginnings of the movie, like, with his, like, with young Howard Stern?
It's very funny.
Yeah, I mean, I like all that stuff. The casting is incredible.
It is incredible.
No, yeah.
And I like that at a certain point, they just have him play high school Howard.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, or no, not
college.
Till college.
College,
yeah.
And he comes on right away and explains it, like, come on, it's a movie.
I even like, and now being the fan I am, and having heard his father talk so much, that
Richard Portnow.
Yeah.
That's who I picture. I mean, what I hear is Stern doing his dad's voice, but the face that I picture is Richard Portnow.
That's so funny.
And anytime I've seen him in a movie since, and he works all the time, I'm like, there's Ben Stern.
But he sounds like Ben Stern.
Yeah.
Like, I was struck by that.
And the actress who plays Jessica, she was the mom on Gilmore Girls for 7 seasons. And, like, I didn't put that together until I came back to Private Parts after watching Gilmore Girls. For oh my gosh, that's Mrs. Gilmore, and Edie Falco shows up in that car scene, and Leslie Bibb shows up as a
she's bringing the tour
through the thing. So yeah, there's certainly a bunch of people that show up early on. Again, Paul Giamatti being another one, like wasn't anything yet, and they kind of plucked him and really helped make him a star.
Absolutely.
You know. And Betty Thomas, again, was really a smart choice for this. And I think even, I mean, not to be too cynical, I don't know how deliberate it was that they got a female director. I don't know that that was a conscious choice.
Right.
But there is a kind of endorsement there when they announced, hey, we're making this movie and Betty Thomas is directing, because again, Stern kind of had such a bad reputation, particularly with women, who felt he was misogynist and his show was just hateful towards women. And honestly, in the '80s, maybe it was more so. I wasn't listening in the '80s, right. You know, whatever. So to have a female director in some ways, I think helped combat some of that criticism right out of the gate, you know?
That's interesting. I didn't think of that.
And she had made the Brady Bunch movie, which again was like, that was probably the best possible version of that, that's you know? True. Like, I have super low expectations, and she did something with that. And then she made this, and I like this better than the Brady Bunch movie. And then it's just been kind of a lot of like...
Didn't she do like Nutty Professor or something like...
No, she did what? Dr. Doolittle.
Dr. Doolittle, that's the one.
She did I Spy. She became a favorite of Eddie Murphy, I guess. She just did a handful of movies. And maybe I'm forgetting something she did that was great. 28 Days? That movie's okay. The Sandra Bullock alcoholism movie. That movie's okay. Like, pretty decent.
I feel like, because I was looking at her, I was looking at her IMDb today, and I kind of feel like this is her best movie.
Yeah, it might be.
Looking through them all.
And again, I didn't grow up like watching Hill Street Blues or anything, so I didn't, her name didn't mean anything to me. I didn't realize she was an actor before she was a director, and that she had come from a comedy background, basically. I just thought she was kind of a for-hire person, which essentially she is.
Well, and I feel like her comedy background kind of comes through in, like, there's a funny little bit where he's like going around campus, like asking girls out, and the blind girl walks up and like feels his nose, and it was like, no, I'm busy tonight. Little comedy stuff, but what I really feel it is, I don't know. Do you think that there's a place where where they're doing the bits in the studio where that could have, that I feel like those scenes could have totally failed.
Sure.
Like the big pussy, like, or the big cock coming out of your mouth, like,
right. That's match game.
Yeah, it's funny to me. I still laugh, even though you're right. It feels like 80s hacky, but seeing it in a movie, I laugh. I think it's funny, and I don't know if that would have always been pulled.
Well,
off.
And again, the advantage of a movie is that it's not just being presented as like, isn't what we're doing comedy gold, because it's being presented in opposition to.
Exactly.
The program directors who are, you know what they're doing.
Right.
Like it's given context. It's set up. So you're not just tuning into the radio and hearing them say like dirty things in goofy voices. You know that this is making someone crazy who we've already established we don't like.
That, right. Exactly.
So it's
that's
a fuck
why that
you.
Scene is so fucking great.
Exactly. So every time they say something dirty, it's not funny because it's dirty. It's funny because you know it's pissing off somebody that you don't like.
And they were just told that these are the words you can't say.
Right.
So they found a way to say them.
Right. That could almost be said of anything in the movie. Like, the whole movie could have been just a total train wreck. And again, it's to Betty Thomas's credit. It's to Ivan Reitman's credit. You know, every once in a while, Ivan Reitman's name is attached to a lot of garbage, a lot of times as director, especially lately. But every once in a while, when he's a producer on something, you're like, no, he knew something there. He got something, and he's part of why this succeeds.
Yes.
Because again, what's funny on the radio isn't necessarily going to be funny on film, and Stern didn't have control over, you know, some of the writing, especially in those sequences where they're ad-libbing stuff or doing old bits or whatever, but he doesn't have control over the editing, right?
Yeah.
And Betty Thomas does, so she knows how to time a joke, and she knows how to space them out, and so her comedy background really comes into play because, another filmmaker who fell in love with that stuff too much would have put too much of it in the movie, would have let it go on for too long.
Yep.
There's any number of ways that it could have gone wrong, but she keeps it pretty tight and shows you just enough to not get sick of it, to leave you wanting more, as evidenced by the fact that you guys turned it off and became Stern fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also want to say that I feel like the last few podcasts I've done with you, I've gone into the movie thinking I like it a lot more than I actually do. Like, I come out of the movie being like, oh, I didn't like that.
It's because we keep doing Bond movies. Man, right? Roger Moore Bond movies specifically.
That's probably what it is. But I was so happy, like, watching this. It hadn't been that long since I'd seen it, but watching it last night and just still, like, I still laugh.
It still works.
And I really do. I mean, again, our initial story proves this, but even now, like, yes, there are things I love about it because I'm a Howard Stern fan, and there are things I recognize that I did not recognize previously. But I still think you do not need to be a Howard Stern fan at all to appreciate it. It's a funny movie, and
it's really solid. Like, I've never convinced myself that, like, this is a great comedy. It's not an all-timer, but, like, for what it is, it works exactly as well as it needs to, you know, and it's funny and it tells an interesting story and you like everybody in it. Again, I think we have an additional level of appreciation for it because we have some investment in, like, how are they as actors?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Anybody who's watching it as a non-fan or whatever, it's just like, they kind of take that for granted. Oh, they were pretty good. Whatever. You know, they don't necessarily put any thought into it, but we're sitting there picking apart, like, because we hear them every day on the radio. So it's like, oh yeah, no, this is actually, they're really giving a performance. They're really, like, good here, you know?
Yep.
And I wonder, you know, if they sucked, I would hope that we would be critical of it. I mean, I don't think any of us are so blinded that, you know, I do not watch America's Got Talent. You know, I don't care that Stern's on it. I'm not going to watch it. So go ahead.
So why do you, I mean, you guys listen to Howard as well. Why is the only version available of this movie? As far as I know, the only thing you can get is still on DVD, right?
Blu-ray.
And the DVD, is it out of print? No, I think it's still in print. For a while, it was in, like, bargain bins. It's not on Blu-ray.
And it's just the movie. Like, there's no extras or anything.
And Stern has said before that a lot of stuff exists, outtakes, extra scenes. He said that all that stuff was there. I mean, who knows if Paramount hung on to any of it, so it may be gone now. But he said, we had a bunch of stuff. Why they never put together a special edition, I don't know. He's never been able to answer it. I don't know. I would think, I mean, now they won't, you know, because physical media is gone. So I think the time to strike, maybe early 2000s, when you know you're at least going to get Stern fans who would buy it, I would think that would sell enough copies that you could justify another pressing of it. But maybe I'm overestimating Stern fans. Again, I think before the movie came out, they were like, this is going to be huge. This is going to make tons of money. It did well, but didn't break records, you know? So maybe they were overestimating how many fans there are. I don't know.
You're probably absolutely right. But I think of Private Parts often when I see, I can't think of a good example, but I'll see a movie come out on Blu-ray with maybe some special features. And I'm like, how did that get a Blu-ray release and Private Parts still hasn't?
At the very least, like, I mean, again, I'm not part of the movie business. I'm not. Like,
back up.
Right. I mean, I'm on a podcast.
You have misled us, and you misrepresented your own credentials.
But go ahead. How much, like, I feel to see that they'd have to put that much money into, how much is it going to be to, like, have, because he tweeted out once while the movie was on.
He did, like, a commentary over Twitter.
Yeah, which we know that he has stuff to say about it.
Right.
We know that there is probably deleted scenes and things like that that do exist. Like, how much would that cost to really just put that together?
I don't know.
And could we have a new donation button on this movie?
There we go.
To go to our Kickstarter. Private Parts special. 2017... Mm-hmm. will be the 20-year anniversary, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that, right?
Yeah.
Does everybody feel super old? that would be the time, you know, I guess, to put something together. I don't think they will. I honestly think it is what it is, you know? You would think you could do some kind of a retrospective and everybody involved with the movie feels good enough about it that they might sit down for an interview. I don't know about Stern. He hates doing anything, but it was interesting when this movie came out. It was at a time where I don't know that I was in school. If I was, I wasn't in a ton of classes, and I was, like, working at this convenience store and whatever. So I had a lot of free time. So I would go to the movies in the morning and leave at night, you know. And I did that a few times a week, and which meant seeing things more than once because there just aren't that many movies out. And I saw Private Parts probably 5 or 6 times just because it would fit into the schedule, you know, like I'll go see Lost Highway and then I'll go see Private Parts and then I'll go see Trial and Error with Michael Richards and then I'll go see That Darn Cat and then I'll go see Lost Highway again, you know, or whatever. Like, and I would just spend the whole day there. So I saw Private Parts a bunch of times and never got sick of it.
Yeah.
I'm insanely jealous of that, like, because we saw it when it was on video. Like that.
Yeah, no, you had to get your shit together at a younger age and realize where talent.
I'm just setting myself up for this. Like we did it to ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really the takeaway. You did it to yourselves, everyone. Anything else about Private Parts?
No, it's great.
Yeah.
Again, even if you're not a fan of Howard Stern, give it a go.
It's on cable a lot. You can see it. Don't watch the VH1 version. Although to VH1's credit, or the USA, I think, was the first network to really run it. And the way that they ran it was, instead of cutting out scenes, they just blurred out things or put boxes over nudity or something. Because you couldn't show the movie and not show that last sequence, because that's what triggers the fight, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And you have a fully naked woman the entire time. So they had to come up with a workaround, you know?
Yeah, that's the scene where he has sex with the woman on the speaker.
That too.
Oh,
like,
right.
That you have to see that scene. Like, that's an
important... Oh, that's another scene I don't like at all.
And you don't like
that push into him, like, doing the lips. No, I'm not a fan of that.
Well, I understand. Okay, yeah, the scene, but you have to see the scene as far as what it sets up.
Sure, yes. Yeah, all right, I agree with that. All right, anyway, thank you guys for listening. As always, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. We're on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. You can like us on Facebook or email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. We're only a few more weeks away from Scary Movie Month, boys.
Woo-hoo! I can't wait.
This is very exciting. Thank you guys for talking about Private Parts.
Thank you.
Bye. Bubble nuts are stupid. Now. Oh, go. You got to do it. You got to do it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.